to try.
Mm. Yeah, and I always get the
quiet.
This this Italian fellow that I had noticed frequently, I didn't pay any attention to him. I didn't, but I had seen him after the incident of a little the little kids. We were sitting on the patio, enjoying the Cuba Libre, El Pecador, the doctor, and myself. We were just making small talk. And this fellow came up to me, and he says, "Hello, Duke." Now, he knew me, he knew my name, and it had to be someone from back in the States, someone I didn't know. And El Pecador was very suspicious. He was a suspicious old man. Right away he pulled out his gun. And this Italian fellow says, "Relax, old man, relax." He says, "If I'd have wanted to knock the Duke off, I could have knocked him off a long time ago. But I just didn't want to do it." He says, "Duke," he told me, he says, "I am Black Malone. I am the Feliciano Damasio's number one torpedo. I am here to kill you." He pulled out a chair and sat down. "I've been paid by Damasio to knock you off. And that's what I intended to do. I've been trailing you from New York all the way here. But you've been one step ahead of me." He says, "Because there's rumors in New York that you're going to avenge Big Sam's death. And the Damasio don't want to take any chances, so he sent me along to make sure that you don't." He says, "But you know what, Duke?" He says, "Yesterday, I was across the street when I saw a drunk drop dead in the street. And I saw the guy that I was going to knock off taking two or three orphan kids and adopt them. You know," he says, "something came over me. I remembered, it made me think, back in Brooklyn, you see, of a little boy. His father was sent to prison and his mother became a drunken alcoholic. And his three sisters became prostitutes. And the little boy became to be Feliciano Damasio's number one torpedo. You know what, Duke?" He says, "You're a good guy. You never hurt anyone." "So," he says, "here." He handed me a paper bag. He says, "There's a gun. There's a loaded gun," he says, "with every bullet with your name on it."
He says, "Now," he says, "I must go." I told him, "Wait a minute." He says, "Where are you going?" He says, "I don't know. You know," I said, "you failed on your job. The master is going to get you now. What are you going to do?" "Oh," he says, "go to Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, I don't know. Anywhere where I'll join a local gang." I said, "Wait a minute."
"I said, you need some money." "He said, no, I don't need money. I got money. I got Damasio's money." So he start to go again, I told him, "Now look, wherever you go, you're going to be hunted down, and they're going to get you. The Muslims will get things like this. The gangsters are never done." I said, "Look, I need a good man. We're going to Argentina. We're going to the Gacho country. I need a good man with a gun. He might as well stay." So he stayed. He joined me then. And he was Black and Malone through the years that he was with me, with us. He showed me the art of a gun, to how to master a gun, because he was a master when it comes to guns.
Was he Irish?
No, he was Italian. Maloney was Maloney's name. Fred Maloney. Call him Blackie Maloney. And we stayed a few days longer at the hotel, and then we went to Mexico City with the doctor and the family. And
he had three children and a gangster.
I had everything. I had
and a wife.
And a wife and a doctor, and then I had a general. And I had three of the best cattlemen with me. So, in the house of the doctor, where the doctor had been a widow for many years, but he had this big place in Cuernavaca. And
he had this maid, Pancha. I never knew her name. Except that everybody called her Pancha, and she called me El Niño. And I could never break her from the habit of calling me El Niño. And she took over the children. She loved them very much. And then we went down south, El Secador and I alone, we went down south to Jalisco to look. See, I don't want no part of Argentina this time. And so we went downtown, I was able to get a lot of land, good land, but I couldn't buy it. But I leased it for 99 years lease. And then I bought cattle and horses, and I set El Pecador and the boys in business, where El Pecador was real happy. Where he stayed there till he died, in that place. I went back to Mexico City, and I started studying under the fat man now. Here comes Diego de Rivera. And my wife continued to study medicine with her father. And we were doing real good, real good. And the cattle business was good. El Pecador and his boys were happy. Black Malone stayed with El Pecador all the time. He became quite a horseman himself. And he caught out all his bad habits. And the other two is east and south of
Southeast. So we stayed there for a long time.
Now Pearl Harbor fell on the 7th of December 1941, and my wife died. She died of childbirth. She died on the 3rd of December. Oh yes, on the 3rd of December, on the day of Pearl Harbor, was her funeral. And
after the funeral, I said that the child lived, but she died. And but this time, see, the doctor got married again. He married a beautiful blonde from Central America, from British Honduras. And Elena was her name. I gave Elena my boy, and which it was the last time I ever saw him or any of them for many years to come. I told the doctor, I told him I'm going back to the States. I'm going to enlist in the Army. See, actually, when my wife died, I died myself. I didn't want to live, period. I mean, it was all over for me. And I went to Jalisco and I told El Pecador, I said, I'm leaving Mexico. You and the boys take care of what we have. If I ever come back from the war, we'll come back here and we'll start all over again. Meantime, don't forget the children. Don't forget the doctor. See that they get their monthly income. And I'm leaving you. Diego Rivera was very mad at me because Diego had big plans for me. So Diego, he loved me like a son. And he was going to make me the greatest of them all. Besides, he, in his politics, he wanted to train me, someone who would really take his place in his international affairs. But my mind was made up, and so Diego told me that he'd never forgive me. So I left. Black and Malone came back to the States with me. And on the 12th of December, 41, we came across the border. We took a taxi, went to Fort Bliss, and we both enlisted in Fort Bliss. We went through the examination. They found us as healthy as young bulls. And we were thrown in the infantry only on separate companies. I was in Company A, Blackie was in Company K. But we saw regularly each other. We were together on our passes and doing pretty good. Inside of 6 months, we were promoted, both of us were promoted. He was promoted to first sergeant, I was promoted to master. And we went through the training, the maneuvers and everything. Good God, it was rough. Yeah. That was a grinding, but we could take it. And we split up. I was assigned to the 36th Infantry Division. And Blackie was, because of his skill with a gun, he was thrown in an artillery division.
And
how about
some coffee if you don't like wine?
Yeah.
You wouldn't have any wine?
No, thank you.
You have any coffee? Cream or sugar?
A little bit of cream and the sugar. In 42, before the year was over, we hadn't been in the Army a year when we were, when I was shipped overseas. We beach landed in Africa. And from that day on, it was steady, taking 1 pound after the other. We went through Iran, Africa, and to the Algiers, the Casablanca.
Did you see him during this period?
No, I never saw Blackie again. And after the war, I made inquiries of him. And I was informed by the War Department that Blackie Malone had been killed in the invasion of Normandy. Now, I was raised the way of my people, and I believed in the way of my people all through the years. But in Africa, I started drifting away from the beliefs of my people, and by the time I was, it was during the battle of Monte Cassino.
Oh, that was a terrible deal.
Where I was wounded in the battle, that was the first time, in the Battle of Monte Cassino. We had been buried there because of the mistakes of, thank you, because of the mistakes of the general. They threw the 36th Infantry in there and we got buried. Then they throwed in the Indian Division to get us out, and they got buried. Then they throwed the Japanese Division, which it was the Gopher Broke, and they got buried. They finally brought in the 1st Armored Division to get us out. And by this time, I no longer believed in God. I had become my own God. I made my own God. Well, it was impossible that no such a thing as God existed where I was concerned. Because I love children, and I love people. I love human beings. And I've seen these kids being slaughtered. I've seen them cut in half by machine guns. I've seen churches being blown. And then I knew of the Jews that had been slaughtered by the orders of Hitler in the gas chamber. The very people, the very children of Palestine, the very God's people. So where is God? What is he doing? There is no such a thing. There is nothing of a divine power. There is no more divine power than a dollar bill and a 45. This is my God. So I became my own God. And I went through the war that way. But this time I was so hard. I lived. There was no tomorrow. This is tomorrow, my tomorrow. Tomorrow I shall die. I just pushed my men to the limit. I went through the war almost to the very end. And in the Battle of the Bulge, I was hit. I was hit real hard. That was the end of me. That's as far as I went. My leg was, I lost my leg by a machine gun. My head was split wide open.
At the same time?
Yes.
At the same?
My arm was shattered. It was all over. I could see my blood all over the snow.
You were lucky if you picked up, you must have been.
I don't know. I remember the beginning, but then I lost conscious. I don't know. For 8 days, that's 8 days of my life that I cannot account for. When I woke up, I realized that I was still alive and knew where I was. I was in a field hospital in Charleroi,
Belgium.
During the night, they took us out of Charleroi and they took us into France. And they put us in the 50th Field Hospital in France. I was in the 50th Field Hospital when the war was over. And I stayed there for a long time. And then later on I was shipped into Frankfurt, Germany to the 97th General, where I'd be evacuated back to the States. And I was in a terrible condition. I couldn't even help myself.
Could you see? Was it speaking?
No, I could talk and I could think. I could see. But I only had one good arm. Both my legs were gone. One leg was paralyzed and the other was off, completely off. And
and you had head operations.
They had sewed me up, and that was it at that time. This terrible headache. I had this killing headache continually.
Were they operated again? Then after that?
They did when I came back to the States. And from Frankfurt, Germany, they put us in the hospital train. And they shipped us up to Bermenhofen, Germany, the 121 hospital. And on the 18th of December, 1945, we boarded the General Stafford Hospital ship back to the States. We spent Christmas and New Year's out at sea. And we came to New York. We docked in New York. From there, we were taken to New Jersey, to Camp Kilmer Hospital in New Jersey. And that was a homecoming. First, because of my commission, I had been commissioned while I was in Africa, I was commissioned to... I had been commissioned to captain while in Africa. But that was battlefield commission. But I actually come from the ranks. So whenever we got back to the States, to Camp Kilmer Hospital, they put me in the officer's ward. And so I complained to the head nurse, and I told her, she was the captain also. I told her, I said, look, I don't belong here. I want to be back there with my boy. So she says, I'll talk to the OD. So the OD, he was a fellow that had been a prisoner of war, a major, a nice guy. He had been a prisoner of war in Japan. And he was a major. So I told him, look, Major, I don't belong here. So what do you mean you don't belong here? He says, look, I'm a battlefield commissioned officer. But I come from the ranks and I belong in the ranks. I want to be out there with my boy. I don't want to have anything to do with this fancy pants. Because I always hated brass. The brass, I always hated them. I never cared for the brass. The only time, after I got commissioned, I slept with my boys, I ate with my boys, I got drunk with my boys. The only time I went to their doings, a party, officer's party or anything like that, it was just the idea of agitating them, just to take the girls, because in those days I had everything. I had money. I had youth, I had rank. I just had everything. Had rank, had prestige, had good looks, and I knew the art of love. So these monkeys, I could just push them out of the way. And the only reason I went there was to agitate them. So the major, he
he was a nice guy. It was all right, he said. I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it. After all, we were heroes. We were heroes coming back from the war. And so anything, we could get anything we wanted. So they wheeled me back, put me in a wheelchair and took me back to the, where the enlisted man was ward. And they gave me a corner bed, and when I come in, was, well, most of my boys, a lot of those boys were in, I knew them. They had been my boys. And so they were real happy. But this time, these bastards were drunk. See, taxi drivers just keep, you know, even the Red Cross people were bringing in whiskey.
Oh.
See, well, we're heroes. We, anything we wanted, we'd get. So, it was a drunken party that night. My singing, hollering, crying, everything was going on. So, by midnight, the OD had to came in and had to knock everybody out with a shot. Because the place was wild, you know. I was the first one, hit me in the arm, knocked me out, knocked everybody out.
Was your leg still paralyzed? Yeah. How long did that last?
8 years.
8 years. Nearly you got it back.
And
how did you ever get it back? Exercise?
I had cancer. I had a bullet. They didn't pull this bullet out in time. And, because of that, I got cancer, which is called osteomalacious.
Yeah, I was born.
Yeah, that's cancer of the bone, that's what it really is. I'll get to that in a minute. So we were in camp and the Camp Kilmer Hospital for a while until we got orientated. And then what they did, they split us. And they sent us to our home station. So due to the fact that I come from a Texas division, Fort Bliss was my home station. The hospital to my home station was William Beaumont, or Beaumont, in El Paso, which is on the outskirts of Fort Bliss. So I came down to Texas, to William Beaumont, and the boys were, you know, spread out different places. And on Fort Bliss, and then on Beaumont, I stayed there a year, 7 months in that hospital. And they couldn't do anything for me. The same routine, the same merry-go-round, and I couldn't paint anymore because I had lost the use of my arm, my hand.
Your right hand?
My left. I was born left-handed. My right hand was so clumsy I couldn't do anything with it. So, meantime, I just stayed there. I bought a new car, a new convertible, and I had a girlfriend. She was a Spanish girl of El Paso, and she was working.
You could walk, or you didn't
no.
have to?
I could never walk. I never did walk.
You had a special car, you could drive.
Yes, special built. It was real special built. Everything on the steering. And it was a Packard to build a special in Detroit for me. And life was very hard for me. Like I say, my girlfriend, she was working in the finance office. And but I started studying. I studied a lot of law while I was there.
Law?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I had this book, until 4 o'clock in the afternoon when she gets off of work. Well, I study, and then she get me in the car.
That's why you picked up that sound of that on the...
Oh, yeah, there's a habit that I have.
Yeah,
I was playing with matches.
Yeah? Incendiary.
And a year, 7 months that I was there, and they finally transferred me to the Latterman General Army Hospital in San Francisco. And I went to San Francisco for a little over 6 years in that hospital. By this time...
6 years in San Francisco?
Yes. And I spent 8 years altogether in the hospital.
Yeah.
The hospital commander was Colonel Volleyball. And he was a rough old man. And, but he liked me. He was a good friend of mine. And he came in and he told me, he says, one day, he says, you know, it's because see, all this time, every 3 months, I had to go 60 days, something like that. I had to go in for a bone scrape.
Yeah.
And then I had to go for another bone scrape, and that was a living hell. During the time I was drinking, but this time I was drinking too much. I was drinking too heavy. I studied law and I drank. And I, in one of my drunken sprees in the hospital, I married some tramp, and it cost me a fortune to get out of that deal. The commander, the colonel, came in one day and he told me, he says, look, you have 4 months furlough coming to you, and money you have. He says, get the hell out of here. Go somewhere. Have a good time. Get drunk. Do whatever you want to do for 4 months. He says, I don't want to see you for 4 months. Just get out of here, because when you come back, I'm going to chop that other leg of yours way up to the hip. That's the only way we can get rid of that osteo. He says, so just go. Go anywhere. Go back to Europe. Go anywhere you want. So I did. I got my furlough. I went to the finance and I drew quite a bit of money. And I just drove out of San Francisco. And I went across the border and I kept going south.
Why? I don't know. Maybe.
Your ranch gone by this time, and the others go? I mean,
no, they're still there.
They're still there? Yeah.
Oh, they come up to visit me regularly. And my adopted children come up to visit me in the hospital. El Pecador, the doctor, and Elena. Oh, these are my real family. This is my true family. My real family, I lost them long ago. So,
you don't know what happened to your father? Did you know
anything? Oh, yes. I went to his funeral last year when he died.
Oh, this last year?
But I mean, I don't belong to him anymore.
No.
I'm an outsider. I've been gone too many years. So, for some reason, maybe it's because I, at one time, I was happy in Acapulco. Maybe it's because there's where I met Filomena. I don't know. But something took me to Acapulco. I went back to Acapulco, back to the same hotel, to the same room, to the same memories of long ago, of the dead past. And I was trying to paint off scratch in the room because I couldn't do nothing else. And get drunk. I was at the bar lounge that day, pretty well loaded, when this girl came in, an American girl, that I knew in Mexico City before the war, at the time I was married to Filomena. And she was studying under Rivera. And she came in and says, "Well, Duke," she says, "what happened to him?" "Ah, the damn war finished me. And I'm in bad shape." So she sat down, had a drink with me, and just says, "Can't you paint me?" I says, "I can't. I'm doing those damn artist tricks. It's the only thing I can do." I said, "I'm finished. I'm finished completely. I'm not worth a thing. I can't walk, I can't do nothing." And of course I'm wearing my uniform. I'm in uniform. But I'm still in uniform. So, and I told her, if I could only master this clumsy right of mine, I'd be all right. But I can't. I try, and the damn thing is so awkward. Just don't do nothing for me. Just says, "Why not let's go see Diego? He'll find something. He'll suggest something." I says, "No. The fat man don't want to have nothing to do with me. He feels that I failed him, and he told me that he'd never forgive me. So I'm not going back to him." "Oh," she said, "yes, he'll forgive you. Come on, let's go." So, before midnight, well, I had enough drinks in me that by this time I was real brave, and I was going to tell the fat man a thing or two myself. And so I said, "Let's go." So we went to Mexico. He wasn't there. He was in Acapulco, in Guanajuato, at his museum in Guanajuato. So we drove down to Guanajuato. And she drove the car. When we got there, Grace, this girl, asked the garden if that was Diego's place. He says, "Yes, here's Rivera's place. Is he here?" "Yes, he's here." Will you tell him that I want to see him in Great Dorea in New York?" And
did he do a portrait of her?
Yes, I think so. So he came out, and then the houseboy came out, and he told her Well, the maestro says, if you want to see him, you go see him, because he is not in the habit of coming out or running to anyone. She says, yeah, that's Diego, all right. She got out of the car and went in. And she told them, they have set their hollows and all that. And he says, I have a surprise for you. What is it? The Duke is here. He's in the car. Well, he said, he told her, he says, what does he think he is, a king or something? He expect me to go to him? So she told him, take it easy, Diego. The Duke is hurt, and he's hurt bad. The war finished him. He can't walk, he only has one leg. His other leg is paralyzed, and he has cancer. He has a plate on his head, a silver plate. And his right arm, his left arm, he cannot use anymore. It's useless. And he needs you. He needs me. He needs both of us. Will you go to him? And will you let him in? Diego says, yes, I'll let him in. Well, get the houseboy to get him in, to bring him in. He can't walk. He says, I'll get him in myself. So Diego went to the car. He jerked the door open. He didn't say a word. He just picked me up. And the first time that I have seen that big man cry, he had tears in his eyes. He had tears all over. He just held me in his arms and took me in. After he was able to talk, after he had a couple of brandy, he was able to talk. He told me, you fool, you little fool, you damn fool. What did you get to fight the war for the gringos? Look at the shape you're in. What did the gringos, you have a chest full of medals. What does medals do for you? He says, why didn't you stay with me? I'd have made you the greatest of them all. But no, you had to go. You had to go and fight for the gringos. Look at you now. We stayed there about a week. And he says, I'm going to take you to the coast. The Indians, they're great at curing cancer. Maybe they can do something for you. So the three of us, we went to the coast.
This coast?
The coast of Oaxaca. And he knew the Indians. So we went there, and apparently everything that was put on the face of earth by the great creator was for one good use. Everything has a good use, a good reason to be there. The most condemned, one of the most condemned clans in the world, there's two very condemned, which is poppy and marijuana. But marijuana has a very good use. Only the authorities in this country condemns it. But it has a good use. Now the Indians, they took the leaf of the plant, which is very big, very large, and they boil it. And they make a tea out of it. Then they took the tea and they bathed the wound with it, with the tea. Then they took the leaf itself and made a plaster all around the leg. and they leave this plaster there until it dries. Meantime, it withdraws everything that's infected. It pulls out. And they continued to do this for the period of 8 days, continuously, applying the same method. Then, after that, they let the sun take care of the rest. They put me out and baked me out all day long out of the sun.
And that's a wound open.
With a wound open. And 3 weeks later, there was no sign of any cancer. I had no pain. And then, at the same time, they start massaging. And then they had this mineral bath. It smelled terrible. Yes, it must have been sulfur. It smelled terrible. But they deep me in it every day. Every day. And obviously, I could move my toe for this time. And gradually, so I just stayed there. We went ahead and stayed there until when I came back from the coast, I was able to stand on that one leg. I couldn't stand for very long, but I could stand for a few moments. So I came, my furlough was up, and Grace and I, we came back to San Francisco, and I went to the colonel, and I told him, well, this is amazing, but how? I told him, because you gringos ain't worth a damn. All you know is a scrape, bone scrape and cut and chop and all that. I said, however, you did a good job on my head when you put that plate, because you did. You made it, see, later on, I had this operation and they put the plate. And a great job, a real great job. I have cost the United States government a lot of money.
Well, they ought to.
So I told them, I told the colonel of this great discovery. And he says, I want you to go, I'm going with you. He says, I want to go down there and see. But he never did. He never got around to do it.
No.
Because he wanted to see how the primitive people give their things.
Isn't the marijuana plant look like the one we have here?
Yes, except that it grows much larger. Yes, in the tropics.
I hear it's much better. Much
and they claim it's better. Better well, over here, I guess.
Oh, they say the northern marijuana, like Rosemont soda, is not much good at all. It doesn't get enough sun.
Yes, but in the tropics, it goes. So I got my medical retirement, see? But this time I had 12 years and the 8 years of hospitalization. I got medical retirement, so I did not get discharged.
Do you think we left him now?
No. My life's been disintegrated.
You don't notice it. Just
see what it is. I have no feeling. I don't feel nothing.
Oh,
sometimes I hurt it. Like I cut it.
Oh,
I don't feel it. Or I can burn it, and I don't feel it.
Oh.
So I was retired from the army. And right away I went back to Mexico. And I went back to Rivera again. And I continue to practice my left and until I was able to do pretty good work.
I met Ernestina in Mexico City, a beautiful blonde from Los Altos de Jalisco, and we were married. We had two children, and we had 20 years of a wonderful life, real good. I couldn't make it. I couldn't make the grade yet. El Pecador died. He died in 1950.
Wow, he must have been old.
He was an old man.
And he did die a natural death. A horse killed him. He died like he lived.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was
he was an old, old man, but he was still active. He was still riding a horse, and he was still shooting orders, and he was still carrying his whip. He called it the cat of nine tails.
Uh-huh.
And I went ahead and kept the ranch down in Mexico, but I spent all my time in Mexico City. And I had a fellow by name of Reyes Ruiz running the ranch, a very good hand, good man. And his brother, Jose Romero, they were taking care of everything for me down there. And I lost $250,000 on that deal to the Astofia. The Astofia, that means mouth and hoof disease. Cleaned me out.
Terrible.
I lost $250,000 from that, so I had to let everything go. And Ernestina, my wife, she was doing pretty good work.
Was she a maiden?
Yes. She was also a student over there, and I was double her age.
She was great in pastel. Mm. And
me. What name did she paint under?
She painted under Ernestine Aragon.
What?
Aragon.
Oh, that's
my own name. Me, myself, I was doing good. My idols were good. My sculptures were good. My paintings, not so hot. I have not been able to make the grade yet. Until 1957, when I defeated Reynaldo Early in British Honduras, when I came up with a star in the ocean, La Estrella del Mar. I made professional.
This is a painting?
Yes, I made professional in 57. The same year, 1957, I did the Angel, El Angel de Tentación, the Angel of Temptation in Paris. And the same year, I made La Muerte Escandalosa in Spain. And the same year, before I went back to Mexico, I made Fountain of Love in London. And for some reason, they tell me, I'm not sure, but they tell me that the Fountain of Love is back in the States. That's some lawyer has it in Los Angeles. But I made that in England. I came back to Mexico City, and I went to work on the La Época del Destino in Mexico City. That was the year that, I was still working on it because that job took me 18 months.
What was that, a mural?
Yes, a small mural.
But it's all sculpture. A small sculpture mural. I was still working on it when Diego de Rivera died. And he died happy. Because I had made the grade. I had made what he wanted me to be. And we went ahead and stayed there until, but then I was at the top of my glory. And but destiny and misfortune misfortune came knocking at my door again. My wife, Ernestina, was killed in a car accident. I had bought a Mercedes, and I had given her this car on her birthday. And the first day she drove it downtown, she was hit by a semi truck that was almost a little better than 2 years ago.
But you had, how many years did you say you had together after?
20 years. Mm-hmm. The kids were, they were already grown up, and they were doing good in the university. My son, they're still in the university. He's studying medicine, and my boy's studying law. Mm-hmm. And I felt real bad after her death. And I couldn't stand it in the city anymore. So I decided to go back to Oaxaca, back to the Indians. Well, away from the human filth, and be close to nature, close to the jungle beasts, that they seem sometimes that they are cleaner than people. I went back down to Oaxaca, and I used to ride horseback at night. Just about sundown, I would saddle my horse and just ride through the night. Let the wind whip my face, whip my chest, make me feel good, real good. And I had been riding most of the night, I guess, and I came in. I was tired, so I went to bed. In the morning, the cook, the Indian woman, brought my breakfast, and I told her to turn the radio on, which she did. At first, I didn't pay much attention to it. It was a broadcast from Cuba, and Fidel Castro was talking. I didn't pay much attention to it. I was busy eating my breakfast. But then he mentioned, he said, a revolution in North America, in the United States. Then I started listening to it. He says, a brave man named Reyes Lopez Tijerina, a guerrilla leader, has attacked the courthouse, a raid of the courthouse at Tierra Maria with machine guns. And they made it big over there, you see what I mean? Machine guns. And it's a revolution. The National Guard is coming in with battle tanks. And so on. So that really, you don't know how it is, you know? But it seemed to me like my chest got this big. I said, at last New Mexico got a leader. Oh, I've known of Reyes Tijerina a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So right away I start making plans. And that day, in the tombs of Montalban, that day I talked to the people myself down there. I talked for about an hour and a half. And I told them, I explained the land grants, I explained the loss of the Indies. I explained to them that this republic has never been conquered. This is a new republic. That we are the heirs of the land grant by the Spaniards and by the Indians. I explained everything to them. And I told them, now there is a revolution in the north and I'm going to the north. Because New Mexico is my country. That's really my country. So I'm going there. And a lot of them, hundreds of men, came from a long way. They came from Jalisco, they came from Chiapas, they came from many places to see me, to come with me to the north because they want to be active in the revolution.
They would have gone with you, huh?
She's got a loaf of bread.
They wanted to come with you, huh? They would have come with you.
I got a kick out of an old man. He was a real, real old man. He came in riding a horse and leading another horse with a pack. Now, he had two pistols, he had two rifles. And he says, I'm ready to go with you, son. He says, because you know, he says, I fought the gringos myself. He says, I'm one of the villistas, I'm a dorado. See, this man had rode with Pancho Villa.
Oh.
And he says, and I'm going with you. I rode with Pancho Villa. He says, I'll ride with you now. I said, well, fine. I said, good. I said, but you wait. Because I can't take any of you. Because I can't take you across the border. But I'll come after you.
If things are real rough over there, I'll come after you. I'll come back to you. So I came back to the States. I settled my business in Mexico and came back to the States. I joined, Reyes was in the penitentiary when I got here. And I went to see him in the penitentiary. And so he told me, he said, you just go ahead and stay in at headquarters and see what we're going to do. So all this time, while I stayed there for a while at headquarters, he came out of penitentiary and I stayed with him down. But I had to go up north, northeastern part of the state, to organize things for the Alianza. In the meantime, I went to work in the courthouse, and I got an office at the courthouse in Las Vegas. And during the Poor People's Campaign, I was a leader for northeastern New Mexico. Which it cost my teeth. The pistol whipped me in Clayton, New Mexico. They destroyed my car. They denied food for me in the restaurant. And
they're real bad over there. Discrimination.
Where's Clayton?
That's from the Texas line. That's near Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Dalhart.
Dalhart.
Near Dalhart. And
did you find many of your old neighbors up there? Was any of them on the land?
Yeah, they had. They threw me in jail. I went back there. Matter of fact, it was last.
Well, even your marriages have had, you know, lasted. To have very good relationships with him. What happened to your first son? Do you ever see him?
Oh, yes. He's